With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Harris. With me, of course, is Mike Tagliere. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80 and at Mike Tagliere NFL. Tags, how was your Sunday?
It wasn't a great Sunday. I think this is the first week of DFS where I'm actually going to like lose money, which is, I can't complain. We're in week 11. Right. I haven't played as much as I typically wanted to. It's just been a weird year where I've spent more time focusing on rankings and adjusting things on the website. But DFS, it was a bad week for me. I mean, Michael Thomas, Robert Woods, those guys just let me down in a big way.
Yeah, we're in a million leagues. We talk about it and how we need to play in fewer leagues. And we care about all of them, and especially ones that are analysts. But I have this one home league that's been ongoing that's like really my baby. You know, the one I really, really care about. And I knew coming in, I was like, this just feels like it's going to be this historically terrible week. It started with AJ Brown on Thursday night. And I was like, this was, and it was. It's the lowest score maybe I've ever put up in fantasy. And I'm very upset about it. So if I'm going to snap at you, you know why.
Well, it's funny because Paul Charchian, he runs the Guillotine Leagues, and he posted a tweet last week, and he goes, geez, Tags, like the team that I had put together was like assembled, like it was phenomenal. But this team legitimately is getting booted this week. I am losing. This team was ridiculous. I mean, I have Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, Keenan Allen, AJ Brown, Tyreek Hill, DK Metcalf. All these guys, and like legit, my team put up like 20 points.
Yeah. This is a bad one. So I'm gonna be a little saucy tonight. Sorry about that.
Same.
You're feisty, Mikey. You get what I'm talking about. All right. We're going to get into it all. Before we do, let me remind you about our November giveaway. It's a signed Alvin Kamara helmet. Remember, three ways that you can enter our contest. You can follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Bros. You can follow us on Instagram at Fantasy Bros. Or you can subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Fantasy Pros. Any of those is an entry. All three of those counts as an entry, meaning you can have three entries into the contest. Just go to fantasypros.com/contest once you've done that and you can enter. All right, Tags, we are starting with Trust or Bust, and we're going five wide here on Trust or Bust. All right, are you ready? Yeah, we're going. We're ready to go here today. Ronald Jones, 23 for 192 on the ground, plus a touchdown, plus a catch for six, just for good measure, not to mention the fact that he fumbled right out of the gate, and that's supposed to be the end of Ronald Jones, but instead he has this monstrous game, I believe the longest run in Bucs history. So Trust or Bust, and Tags, there is a correct answer here. If you give me the wrong answer, I'm ending the podcast.
Well, I want to give you the wrong answer now. I'm going to go with Bust. It's the Carolina Panthers. We knew that this team was going to run on them. It was just a matter of who was going to run on them. And Ronald Jones, after he fumbled, I think we all thought, you know, this is the end. You know, he's going to be on the bench for the rest of the game. But then Leonard Fournette drops the pass in the flats, and it's like, okay, Ronald Jones is back on the field. Then he breaks that long run. Then he continues to go for 193 yards or whatever it was. So, man, it was a good game for him, but unfortunately, he doesn't get to play Carolina every week. Next week, he goes against the Rams, which is a much tougher matchup. So, yeah, if your trade deadline has not passed, I highly suggest trying to find someone to give Ronald Jones away to.
That's correct. That is the correct answer. It is nice. A bust. And it was, I remember I told you about the league where I was just like, man, I know everything was going to, we were going against Ronald Jones. So it was one of these things where I knew everything was going to go terribly. But yeah, I don't know what this was. Of course, the Panthers, a great matchup, but it doesn't really matter. I'm not trusting him going forward. There is no way you should ever be trusting any Bucs running back. Trust or bust. Wayne Gallman, 18 for 53 on the ground, plus two touchdowns, adds a catch for seven. Four straight games with a touchdown. At least Freeman is on IR. Trust or bust, Wayne Gallman.
Trust in the hell out of him. He's moving up in my rankings quickly. The rest of the season, I might move him up as a top 25 running back with Devonta Freeman on IR right now. He's had a brutal schedule. I mean, he's played against Philadelphia, Tampa Bay, Washington, and then Philadelphia again. That's like one of the toughest stretches of football that you can play. And then he gets Cincinnati when he comes back from his bye week. So he's going to be ranked once he comes back from his bye against Cincinnati. I will have him ranked as a top 20 running back in that matchup. After that, it's Seattle. Not so great. But at the same time, you're getting a running back that's guaranteed 15 plus touches. And honestly, he looked fantastic against Philadelphia today. Like, he's running with a purpose. Love to see that with a running back. And it does help that he has some fresh legs, you know, coming off the bench later in the season. So I trust him.
Yeah, this is what's weird. It's not just the production. He actually looks good. Mm-hmm. Like, he really does. So I agree with you. He's a trust for me as well. Next up, JD McKissick, 15 targets, 7 catches, 43 yards, plus 8 carries for just 6 yards. But he does find the end zone. Tags his 29 targets the last two games. He got like 11 of them in like the first like 4 minutes or something. I was like, what is happening in this case? Trust, bust, or I'm gonna give you a new one. Trust, bust, or disgust. Tags, what do you think? This is like ridiculous. Trust, bust, or disgust, whatever.
I mean, I'm going to move more towards disgust because he was so inefficient with them that it
that
was
wasn't kind of... an actual option for you, but I appreciate you going with it. Go ahead.
I want to use it anyway, but
that's
I mean, in reality, you're going to be able to trust him the next couple of weeks because they're going to go against Cincinnati next week, and then they have Dallas the week after that. But then you're going to match up with Pittsburgh, San Francisco, Seattle. You could view that as a positive or a negative because you know, he's definitely a guy that does better in the negative game script because he's going to be using that passing game. Alex Smith is checking down so much. He's got happy feet. You know, understandably so, Alex Smith looks a little he looks shaky in the pocket. He's just not, he doesn't want pressure. And unfortunately, behind that offensive line, he's going to get it. But the thing is, Antonio Gibson, they were down, you know, over 2 touchdowns in that game. And Antonio Gibson just started getting more touches, and then they started getting back in that game. So it was like, all right, well, is Antonio Gibson becoming a thing because McKinnon has been so ineffective with the targets that he's been giving? It's not ineffective, I should say, but more of like just a guy. He's just a guy. He doesn't have much explosion. So you can trust him as a floor option, but I'm not going to trust him as like an RB2 moving forward.
Next up, Marvin Jones, 10 targets, 8 catches, 96 yards, and a touchdown, 4 touchdowns in his last 3 games. Let's assume Galladay continues to be out here because I'm just going to say that if Galladay's back, there's no way that Mike Tagliere is going to trust him. So trust or bust, Marvin Jones, assuming that Kenny Galladay is out for at least a couple more games.
Bust. I mean, he went against the league's number one defense against wide receivers, and then he goes and puts up his best stat line of the year. I don't know. It's been really touchdown dependent for him. I don't want to say that 1 week should define what we think about Marvin Jones. So I'm gonna say bust.
Yeah, Marvin Jones is never a trust. That's just the rule. Finally, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, 6 targets, 4 catches,
bust.
140. I didn't even give
you
the
didn't
line.
Have to finish. Okay. No, just no.
You don't even know what his yards were. I mean, I could have said I had 700 yards today, Tags. How about
and
that?
I still wouldn't feel confident playing him.
No, I'm not either. I just need to say 3 touchdowns the last 2 games. Alan Lazard is coming back. If Alan Lazard was not coming back, would you at all trust him or just off the radar for you entirely?
No, I mean, he's a desperation play during bye weeks, but we're towards the end of bye weeks. You probably don't need someone like that. It's to the point where I would rather have someone play Valdes-Scantling against me than have him in my lineup. That's how I feel about it, because I think it's more often that he's going to bust. A couple big plays have made it for him. He's very touchdown dependent. He's just a guy that you throw in there as a Hail Mary. It's kind of like a Mecole Hardman play. You're just hoping for a big play, and if you don't get it, you're going to be really disappointed.
All right, let's get to what's your problem, man. I have a confession. Your rest of season rankings are better than mine. I this is just a fact. I'm nothing if not honest. And in fact, we rank them now. I don't know if people know that. We have an accuracy challenge for rest of season rankings, and that's actually borne out. Tags had the 3rd most accurate rest of season rankings as of last week so far, I had the mere seventh, but I think realistically we need to reverse what's your problem, man. But since I'm the host, I have dug deep and I have found one person that I can say you are too low on based on where we are different. And that's Brandon Ayuk. You had him 49th coming in. I was a little bit higher than him. 14 targets, 7 catches, 75 yards, and a touchdown. The game is ending right now. I assume that's his final line. I understand that Deebo Samuel is going to come back, but still, tags 49th. I mean, that's wide receiver 5. You got to move him up, don't you think?
Yeah, I probably could have moved him up a little bit, but you get into the area of guys like John Brown, Marvin Jones, and you're probably right. He probably should be over Marvin Jones. Yep. But Deebo Samuel, when he comes back, you're going to have Raheem Mostert come back. The team is going to go towards that more run-heavy approach because, let's be real, with Jerick McKinnon and Jamichael Hasty back there, they're not going to have a run-heavy approach. We knew they weren't going to be able to run the ball against the Saints, so it's not surprising to see him rack up the targets in here. I had Ayuk ranked as, I think, the number 27 wide receiver this week, so I had him high compared to everybody else, but apparently not high enough considering the matchup. But I probably deserve to be called out on that one because realistically he should probably be like in the wide receiver, I'll call it wide receiver 42 range, because I don't think that he's a must play every week in like the top 30 or anything.
Well, great. You had him ranked higher than I did this week. So really, it's what's your problem, man, with me? Because I had him 30th. So way to go. Way to ruin the game. Let's get into the games. Browns 10, Texans 7. Really just an awesome game. Look, lots of wind, not a lot of offense. So we everybody kind of knew this was coming in. Nick Chubb, though, let's talk about the running game. Nick Chubb, 19 for 126 and the touchdown. Of course, could have had 2 touchdowns, but he went out of bounds. I don't think I've ever seen anybody actually go out of bounds right for it. They usually just fall. But he learned. Todd Gurley, sometimes you can't stop your momentum. You have to be smart. Kareem Hunt, 19 carries, 104 yards. He also adds 3 catches for 28 yards. Tags, coming into the game, you had Nick Chubb 9th rest of season at running back, and you had Hunt 14th rest of season. Does anything change for you? Is that about what you think going forward after this game?
I moved Chubb up to 8, and I moved Hunt to 15, and the only reason I moved him down a spot, it's not because he looked bad or anything like that. This was actually the best game of Kareem Hunt's season in terms of yardage, but it's because DeAndre Swift basically came out in a workhorse role. They started him, and they gave him, I think, 21 of 25 touches available in that game, so I moved DeAndre Swift ahead of Kareem Hunt. So I still have Kareem Hunt as a pretty rock solid RB2 in my rest season rankings, but Nick Chubb did surpass. I moved him ahead of Joe Mixon. So yeah,
Swift would have been trust or bust, but it's an obvious answer and it's trust, so I'm not even getting there. Mayfield just 20 pass attempts here, 132 yards. Rashard Higgins is your leading receiver with 48 yards. Landry just 29. I assume, Tags, are you just ready to throw this entire game out because of the wind?
This entire game, I don't want to take anything from. It's almost like, you know, I have these spreadsheets in like a million different ways, and I just almost want to delete this game from the database and just say, you know what, I'm not even going to count it, because I know that anytime I go and look at basically like what's happened against the team lately, I'm going to just pass over that game, and I'm going to note it, and I'm going to say, you don't want to take anything away from this game, because it was just way too, the weather conditions were absolutely brutal.
All right, so we throw out the entire passing game for both teams. You know, the Texans, you and I talked about, what are we doing? How far are you moving down? Where did you wind up with Will Fuller, out of curiosity?
I moved Fuller down to wide receiver 23. Okay. So I think I was close to you. And then Brandon Cooks, I think, put wide receiver 33.
Yeah. Okay. So you were slightly lower on Cooks and slightly higher than on Fuller. But yeah, we moved him all the way down. But anyway, we're throwing it all out. Deshaun Watson, just 163 yards passing, does have the touchdown. It goes to Farrell Brown. Brandon Cooks, 39 yards receiving. Will Fuller, 38. But if we are going to talk about anything, let's talk about Duke Johnson, 14 for 54 on the ground. He has no catches. I mean, I did expect more here, Tags, because I expected them to lean into the running game entirely and maybe to dump off. So David Johnson's on IR. How do you, just generally speaking, since we haven't been able to talk about it since it happened, how do you view Duke going forward?
I'm really frustrated by the lack of, you know, competency of play calling from the Houston Texans. And I'll even say Deshaun Watson to a certain extent, because it's now to the point where part of it's on Watson because he's gone through a couple offensive coordinators. And I don't know why this team doesn't target their running backs and tight ends more often to move the sticks, because, you know, there's only been 2 games this year where they've targeted their tight ends more than 4 times. And in those games, Jordan Akins had 7 catches for 55 yards. And then Darren Fells had 6 catches for 85 yards and a touchdown. Duke Johnson's a fantastic wide receiver. David Johnson, one of his best attributes throughout his entire career, was as a receiver. And it's like, in a game that you have 30 plus mile an hour winds and 50 to 60 mile an hour gusts, why the hell are you not targeting your running backs out of the backfield to move the sticks? It makes absolutely zero sense. And sometimes it's like rational coaching is something we assume. And we just can't do that with some coaches or quarterbacks because, you know, quarterbacks do ultimately have the control over where the ball is going to go. But again, it's like, you know, 5 years running now where this team just doesn't target their running back. So it's a little bit frustrating because I thought Duke Johnson would actually get a bump considering the game conditions.
Yeah. So what do you think though about him going forward here? I mean, you know that David Johnson's out at least 3 weeks. It's unusual tags. I mean, unless I can't remember it happening where, I mean, I realize that the team is out of it, but that he has a concussion. We were even talking about, is he guaranteed to miss this week? And suddenly he's on IR for 3 weeks. So it could be even longer. They've got the Patriots next, then the Lions, then the Colts. What do you think about Duke Johnson? Like, is he basically an RB2?
Yeah, the Patriots is not a matchup you need to run from. It just teams like average so few plays against them. That's why there's not a whole lot of fantasy production against them. So it's not a terrible matchup. And then you look at the one after that against the Lions. That's a smash spot. Like running backs should absolutely crush against the Lions. So I've actually moved Duke Johnson up. He's my RB26 the rest of the season because we're at the point where I'm operating like it's his job right now. And David Johnson, I've lowered to RB29. So at least I know the player that's in the lineup. And that's why I moved Duke Johnson ahead of David Johnson. So
Lions 30, Washington football team 27. Good game here. You touched on it, but DeAndre Swift, 16 for 81 on the ground, 5 targets, catches all of them, 68 yards, and the touchdown through the air. He got word came out before the game. He's going to get the start. He dominated the touches. So you mentioned it. You put him above Kareem Hunt. Now, where is he? 14, 13?
Yeah, I'm at 14. Right there with Ezekiel Elliott. And we could probably make the argument that he should be ahead of Zeke, but I'm not going to go there yet.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I don't think there's too much to discuss. I think they know what they should be doing, essentially, with this backfield. And it was good to see it happen here. Meanwhile, we talked about Marvin Jones. Marvin Hall catches a touchdown. Really disappointing game here, tags from TJ Hockenson in a game where Matthew Stafford threw for 276 and 3 touchdowns. Hockenson sees just 4 targets, 2 catches, and 13 yards. Just a bad game here for Hockenson or what?
Well, I was a little worried. Midweek, he had popped up on the injury report with toe injuries, and he was a DNP, and then he returned to practice. So I was like, all right, I don't want to take too much away from it. But when you see a pass catcher pop up midweek with an injury, it's typically not a good thing. This was, in terms of like Football Outsiders, their DVOA metric that takes opposition into consideration when doing it, Washington is the best matchup for tight ends. It is the best in the league. So Hockenson consensus was the tight end 2, I think, this week. The tight end 3, maybe. Two or three. But that injury clearly probably affected his efficiency. I need to go and look and see what his routes run were when they're available tomorrow. But I wouldn't be shocked if he was limited in his routes or just basically it just may have messed with his efficiency because this was just out of character for him because he's been relatively consistent.
All right. On the other side of the ball, we already talked about McKissick. Alex Smith throws for 390 yards in the attempt to come back. 95 of them go to Terry McLaurin, who also added on a 27-yard run. My guy, Logan Thomas, 6 targets, 4 catches, and 66 yards. But let's just very briefly, Antonio Gibson, who you also mentioned earlier here, tags 13 for 45 on the ground. But he does find the end zone twice, catches all 4 of his targets for 20 yards. So how do you view Gibson going forward?
It took the Lions a long time to realize that DeAndre Swift was their best running back and to kind of put him in that role. Gibson has really had the starting role, which is so they can't just announce 45 minutes before the game like the Lions did and say, hey, Antonio Gibson's going to start for us today. I wish they would have that come clarity moment where they just say, hey, we're going to give Antonio Gibson like 75% of the work and see what happens. I would love to see that because Antonio Gibson can create, whereas JD McKissick he's more of just a guy. He's a third down back that can mix in early downs every now and then, but he's not a guy you want carrying the ball a whole lot. It was actually disappointing to see both of these guys combined for 21 carries and 51 yards on the ground because Detroit has been smashed on the ground. But again, if Alex Smith has got these happy feet and he's worried about pressure, he's going to continue to dump it down. So just playing snaps is going to be a huge thing for Gibson. I have him ranked as the RB19 rest of season. I can't move him ahead of Raheem Mostert, who I'm expecting to come back next week, even though it's very close in that range. That's kind of how I view those guys.
Yeah, I mean, off the bye, you'd have to assume that Mostert's going to be back. I agree. That's basically where he falls for me. I actually had him a little higher than you did coming in. I had him at 16 already coming in. He's probably going to land right there when all is said and done because it's what he is. It's not, I mean, he scored 2 touchdowns, but he's not inspiring. And yet that basically makes you an easy RB2. Let's go to the Packers 24, Jaguars 20. This is another win game here, tags. But Aaron Rodgers does throw for 325 yards and two scores. He also runs one in. One of those touchdowns goes to MBS, as we discussed. One goes to Devontae Adams, 12 targets, 8 catches, 66 yards. I think he had what was an ankle injury that he left briefly, and then I don't know if that was the first play he came back.
Yeah, he came back and then scored a touchdown.
That's when he scored the touchdown. Yeah. So he's and a great catch high up in the air. But you thought this would be a run-heavy game here, tags against the Jaguars, and you know, with all the wind, just 13 for 46 on the ground for Aaron Jones. He saves his value a bit in the passing game with 5 catches for 49 yards. Jamal Williams, you know, factors in here, 11 touches for 55 yards. Anything here on the Packers running game that stuck out to you?
It was a very disappointing game for them. I talked about it in the live stream. I expected Jamal Williams to have 10 to 12 touches in this game, so it worked out exactly as I thought. Aaron Jones getting 18 touches. It almost played out exactly as I thought it would, because I was like, you know, the Jaguars allow 30 running back touches per game, and that's not factoring the fact that we're expecting a positive game script for the Packers, the fact that there's high wind conditions, everything added up to tons and tons of touches. So I was like, even if Aaron Jones gets 18 touches, I'm still expecting 12 for Jamal Williams. So I talked up Jamal Williams as like an RB3 flex play today on the live stream this morning, and it all worked out as I thought, except well, the Packers weren't leading for one, and two, they just weren't efficient. For whatever reason, they just were not able to move the ball as much as I thought they would on the ground against Jacksonville, which, again, it kind of goes back to Washington disappointing on the ground against Detroit. These two teams that had smash. I mean, the only one that really worked out was Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt against Houston, but it was disappointing. There's no other way to put it, and you can clearly see that Jamal Williams is going to eat into Aaron Jones' production, because this game was not a blowout. That was the reason that I think people had to worry about Aaron Jones coming into this week, saying, what if they jump up by, you know, 2 touchdowns, 17 points, something like that, and why would you keep Aaron Jones out there if you want to keep him fresh for the playoffs? This was a close game. They were actually behind in this game in multiple points, so that's not the reason. This is a timeshare.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Tags. Like, in the end, I think we have to probably, I mean, I don't know, where did you have Aaron Jones? You
had
him 5. So are you leaving him there? Are you moving him down at all with this?
I'm keeping him there just because I don't like who's around him. I mean, I'm not going to move James Conner ahead of him. I'm not going to move Miles Sanders. I don't know. I can't move him ahead. That offensive line's not great. Nick Chubb is not involved in the passing game at all. So it really comes down to just lack of options behind him.
Yeah, it's bad where we're at the 5th running back in the rankings. Not him 4th, but 5th running back, because I had McCaffrey behind him because of the injury. But it's bad that we're at the 5th running back in our rankings and we're like, there are questions now. But that is the landscape that we're in right now. For the Jaguars, I don't know, Tags. It's kind of like, if you ask me what I expected to see in this game, this is kind of it. You know, James Robinson, 25 touches for 112 yards. Keelan, maybe not the Keelan Cole touchdowns. He has 2 of them, 1 a receiving touchdown, 1 a punt return. DJ Chark, 5 targets, 4 catches, 56 yards. He got open early on, you know, deep, but the wind kind of knocked that ball down a little bit. Otherwise, it would have had a long touchdown. Jake Luton, 169 yards and a touchdown and an interception. I mean, I don't know. This is just kind of what I expected to see in a windy game. What about you?
Yeah, it was kind of what I expected too. I thought DJ Chark might have a couple more targets than he did. Cole having a game that he did, it was a bit surprising, but I mean, 47 yards. We can't predict the kick or their punt return touchdown. And then obviously touchdowns are a little fickle, but I can't wait to see DJ Chark with an actual quarterback next year.
Yeah, I'll be honest, Tex, I'm encouraged a little bit in this game for DJ Chark. I've been a little down on Chark, at least compared to you, for rest of season. And I know he didn't get a ton of targets in this game, but, you know, Luton, I guess, has played more competently than I thought. I mean, he's not great or anything like that, but he is able to get Chark the ball when he needs to. And again, it was windy here, but there was a play where he was open and Luton has a big arm and the wind just knocked it down. And it could have been very, very easily in any other, you know, without the wind, that ball is like a 70-yard touchdown and he has a huge game. So for me, I'm kind of encouraged here by Chark. I realize we didn't get the 12 targets or the 15 targets, whatever we wanted, but in the end, I don't know. I think it's gonna be fine. Now I think they have Pittsburgh next weekend, if I'm correct. But I don't know, Tex. I feel a little better about Chark, oddly enough, after this game than I otherwise would. Call me crazy. I don't know. But
you
this
are
is
crazy, but I don't know if that's the reason.
So crazy that we're moving on to Giants 27, Eagles 17. We already discussed Wayne Gallman, Daniel Jones, 244 yards passing. He does run for 64 yards. With the score, your leading receiver is Darius Slayton, 5 catches for 93 yards. Shepard, 6 for 47. Ingram really disappoints here, 2 for 15. Tags, can you start any Giants pass catcher going forward?
I mean, if you're in a pinch and you want a floor in PPR format, Sterling Shepard's the guy. After this game, we are now up to 21 straight games where he has seen 6+ targets in games. He left that Bears game early. I'm not counting that. But 21 straight games with 6 targets. That's, he doesn't have a super high ceiling, but he does offer a floor. And in this game, he catches all 6 of his targets for 47 yards. Darius Slayton is more of like the guy that, he's like the worst version of Will Fuller, where you're just hoping that he gets 5 or 6 targets and you're hoping he breaks one of those long plays. But, you know, he's a guy that's in wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5 territory with again, he has a floor of 1 target. We saw 1 target back in last week. So you can't start any of them with any confidence or feel good about it.
Yeah. I don't want to start. I mean, you're right. I think Shepard is the one who offers the highest floor, but man, I hate starting any Giants pass catcher. I really, realistically. But yes, Shepard is the only guy who I think you can say, all right, I know this guy isn't going to completely bury me in any given week. For the Eagles, Tags, this was supposed to be the week, man. This was supposed to be it. Off a bye. Everybody was healthy. Miles Sanders was back. 15 for 85. 2-point conversion. 10 through the air. So, I mean, you're not going to kill him for that, but there are 2 touchdowns in this game for the Eagles, 1 by Boston Scott, 1 by Corey Clement. Carson Wentz, just 208 yards. Your leading receiver is Richard Rodgers, and that's 60 yards. I don't even want to talk about this game, Tags, but apparently that's our job. So what do you do? What do you take away at all from this Eagles offense this game?
Honestly, I was hoping that we hit the reset button on Carson Wentz's season with the bye week and all that coming back. And unfortunately, it just didn't happen. He looked like the same quarterback. He's double clutching his throws and he looks out of it.
He's also getting pressured on that's every play.
And that's something that he hasn't had to worry about in the past. So that could be something for him where it's just like the pressure is just too much for him. But the biggest takeaway from this game is Travis Fulgham, the performance there. Cause he's a guy that I put higher than the consensus this week. Cause I was the one that was kind of like behind him. So I'm like, I want to see a few games together, like string a few more games together before I fully trust you. And then it was like, okay, we're at like 4 games now in the starting lineup where you've performed at least 73 yards in each game. And it's like, all right, now coming off the bye, I was like, he was doing that while Wentz was playing terribly. So I was like, right, if Wentz comes out of this and he's playing well, sure, Jalen Reagor is going to get some targets, whatever. That's fine. But I felt like it was going to be, I ranked him as a top 20 wide receiver this week, and then this happens, and it's like, oh, this is what we were worried about all along, because Carson Wentz, with him playing as bad as he is, it has to affect his pass catchers, right? But unfortunately, it seemed like Travis Fulgham was immune to that for a while. Dallas Goedert leaves the game early on. He ends up coming back, but he missed a chunk of the game, so ultimately, it was just super disappointing. Like, Carson Wentz has been bad, but he got even worse in this game.
I know, that's the thing. I mean, I'm not sure what to do with it. I'm really not, because he's been bad the whole year. Yeah. So I really don't know. Just the fact that Fulgham didn't factor in at all. 1 catch for 8 yards. They have Cleveland, then Seattle coming up. I don't know, man.
Got to hang in there with him.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not. Yeah, that is certainly what I'm doing. I mean, I roster him. I started him in a league this week. You're hanging on. Let's see what it looks like, because this was just absolutely gross. Let's go to the Bucs 46, Panthers 23. We talked about the running game already. The passing game, also very good. Tom Brady throws for 341 yards and 3 touchdowns, also rushes for 1. Chris Godwin catches all 6 of his targets for 92 yards. Mike Evans sees 11 targets, catches 6 of them for 77 yards and the touchdown. Antonio Brown, 8 targets, 7 catches, 69 yards. Gronk also 51 yards and the touchdown. Did your opinion change on any Bucs pass catcher after this game, Tags?
It may have raised Mike Evans a little bit, because this is like the first game we saw regular offense where it's like Tom Brady was actually like a human being rather than like just a guy who couldn't throw the ball. And he targeted Mike Evans 11 times. That's his second highest total this season. I think it tied the most on the season. It just so happens that the other time was against Carolina as well. But that was in a game where Chris Godwin wasn't in the lineup and Rob Gronkowski wasn't playing well and Antonio Brown wasn't on the team. So I didn't think he would get close to that 11 targets that he did this week. I got a few red zone targets. It seems like they still like him in the end zone. So Mike Evans probably moved up a little bit. But again, these guys are going to cannibalize each other a little bit. It's just like the Steelers, right? where unless Roethlisberger and Brady are throwing for 300 plus yards in a game and three touchdowns, you're going to have a guy here and there that are just going to completely bust, and you're going to have to live with that. Unfortunately, there's receivers that do that all the time. Like, you could look at, we can go through the top 20 wide receivers right now and find warts on, you know, probably 15 of them. So yeah, I think that they're all moving forward. I'd say that they're all probably in the top 30 wide receiver conversation.
Yeah. I think the Steelers are an appropriate comp. I think it's basically every week, say, everyone says, are you, you know, who are you starting? And the answer is you're starting all of them. That's basically what you're doing. And I think that's what you're going to do here with the Bucs pass catchers, because hopefully there should be enough volume to sustain all of them. They have a pretty soft schedule going forward in terms of pass defenses. So yeah, just roll them out there. And I mean, that's, I don't really think my opinion on Evans changed all that much after this game, but I think that, like I felt coming in, they're all pretty solid starts each and every week for the Panthers. A couple of things to unpack. First, Teddy Bridgewater throws the two touchdown passes. He also runs for another. He leaves late with a knee injury. They declined, you know, Matt Rhule declined to comment on it. But the early word, I think I saw a tweet from Rappaport that an MRI, but that the early word is that they're optimistic, that it is not serious at all. And that if anything, he might even be able to come back next week, but whatever. We will let's table the what happens to this offense if PJ Walker has to start, because we'll deal with that coming into this week. And right now it's unclear based on the rap tweet. So let's just assume Bridgewater is healthy here. DJ Moore leads the team in targets. You don't usually have that. 7 targets, 4 catches, 96 yards plus the score. Robbie Anderson, very quiet, 6 targets, 4 catches, 21 yards. Curtis Samuel, just 12 yards. What are your thoughts here on the Panthers wide receivers?
Oh man, this is a week to week thing. Robbie Anderson, I was just looking at that. He had totaled 99 plus yards in 4 of his first 5 games with the Panthers, but now he has failed to top 77 yards in each of his last 5 games. Now, granted, that's a high benchmark, but 21 yards in week 10, that's a season low. His previous season low was 48 yards, which was 2 weeks ago against, or two, 3 weeks ago, the 2 games ago, I should say, against the Atlanta Falcons, where he had 48 yards. So, I mean, he's still somebody that you're probably going to trot out there as a top 24 wide receiver, but it's slowly coming back down to earth where it's like these guys are probably going to alternate week in, week out. And I don't know if you can project one higher than the other, because DJ Moore has always been talented. It's just been the targets have been the issue. If PJ Walker has to take over, it brings a new dynamic, because we don't know who he's going to favor in the offense. He does have a gun, I mean, in terms of what I've seen in the NFL. So, I mean, I think you have to just kind of put these guys out there as I think Robbie Anderson should be viewed as a low-end wide receiver 2. And as for DJ Moore, more of like a mid to high-end wide receiver 3.
Yeah, I think the big thing here is I am moving down Anderson, because you made the correct point that I think he's still somewhat living off his early games. And realistically, it just hasn't been that pretty. You know, he's a guy you're still going to start out there, but I had moved him into sort of high-end wide receiver 2 territory, and I hadn't really moved him back enough, I think, over the last couple of weeks. So rest of season, he's going to be moving down my rankings. Mike Davis gets banged up here. I think a wrist injury. He does come back in, just 11 touches, 44 yards. Tags Christian McCaffrey may be back next week. I know it's been disappointing for Mike Davis, even when he has been starting, but next week they get the Lions. So I assume if Christian McCaffrey is out, you'd still start Mike Davis, no questions asked next week.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. This was okay. A tough matchup. And then like being he hurt his finger in the game, that was going to affect his pass catching ability, which obviously was what he needed to deliver value against the Bucs.
Right. All right, let's get to the Dolphins 29, Chargers 21. Jordan Howard and Matt Breida were inactive here. Savon Ahmed, 21 for 86, plus a touchdown on the ground. So Miles Gaskin, I believe, is out at least another game with IR. So just how do you value Ahmed here going forward rest of season?
I mean, it's clear that they want a one-back system there, and Ahmed is probably the guy. In terms of what he offered them today, they walk away with the win. He blocks, you know, 22 touches. He's going to basically be your Miles Gaskin for another week, and that obviously delivers value. We were always hesitant to say, oh, Miles Gaskin's someone you have to play, but now all of a sudden it's like, we kind of want to start the running back that's starting in this offense because they want to give that guy 18 plus touches.
Yeah, no, I agree. So what do you think happens when Gaskin comes back then? I mean, because it doesn't feel like with the way Ahmed would perform that they would just toss him to the side, would they?
I want to say they would. It's I don't think that he's done enough to where he steals the job from Gaskin. He may take over that Matt Breida role where it's like he's getting, let's say, 8 touches a week or something like that. But Gaskin, he may remove like the ceiling off Miles Gaskin, but I don't think he's going to be someone that we have to worry about when Gaskin comes back.
All right. Meanwhile, Tua throws 2 touchdown passes, but they're to Jakeem Grant and Durham Smythe. Mike Gesicki, just 40 yards. Devontae Parker, 7 targets, but just 2 catches for 31 yards. Should we be rostering any Miami pass catcher at this point?
Devontae Parker, yeah. This was a tough matchup. And the reason that I think a lot of people ranked him as a top 30 option is because there's just a lack of competent pass catchers in the offense that you can really trust. And people were pointing at Parker saying, oh, he's going to get so many targets this game. And I couldn't disagree with that. But at the same time, the main strength of that Chargers secondary is Casey Hayward on the perimeter. And we always knew he was going to cover him. Now, the stat line would look a little bit different if the one touchdown wasn't overturned, because Devontae Parker did catch a touchdown in that game, but it was overturned because he didn't get the second foot down. So it could have, it could have looked like a different stat line in the end. It could have been, you know, 3 catches for 40 yards and a touchdown. It wouldn't have been great, but it would have been serviceable. So Parker is still someone as a wide receiver 3.
Yeah, and that is fair, but that was clearly not a touchdown. Like, that wasn't one where it was like you saw it, you were watching it at the time. We all said, no, that's not going to be in there. Okay, for the Chargers, tags, Kalen Ballage, again, 18 for 68 plus 5 catches for 34 yards. Tremaine Pope was active, tags, he just didn't get a touch in this game. I mean, Joshua Kelly got a few and didn't do anything with it. I know Eckler's tweet got everybody all excited. I do not expect Eckler to be back for at least a couple more weeks. Is Ballage a guy that we can rely on as long as Eckler is out?
I mean, he's better than Joshua Kelly. That much we know. Joshua Kelly has been so disappointing in terms of, like, I think that there's been one game this year where he's averaged more than 3 yards per carry. It's kind of ridiculous at this point. So, I mean, yeah, I guess we do trust Kalen Ballage. They're probably going to send him down back to the practice squad, then sign him again a couple days before the game and whatever. But yeah, I think right now we kind of have to. With the way Justin Herbert's playing, teams don't really respect the run game of that team. So Kalen Ballage continue to be serviceable, probably in like that Wayne Gallman territory, as guys that are, they're getting 18 plus touches and you just can't find that anywhere, like on the waiver wire. So yeah, I'll trust him.
This is very 2020 that we are trusting Kalen Ballage. Meanwhile, Keenan Allen, late touchdown, but just 39 yards receiving. Mike Williams, 38 yards receiving. Hunter Henry finds the end zone, but just 30 yards receiving. Anything to worry about here, tags, or is this just something where we need to really respect the Miami defense?
Learn to respect Miami's defense. This team is really turning things around. It was a tough matchup on the perimeter. It really was. Byron Jones and Xavien Howard are two of the better. It's one of the better cornerback duos they have. Keenan Allen fortunately plays some time in the slot, which allows him to get some production. But even this was a disappointing game for him. It's the first game where Justin Herbert threw for like less than 265 yards. So I'm not too worried. It's just the matchup against Miami has turned. It's starting to look tougher and tougher as the weeks go on.
It really is. That I think the biggest takeaway from this is a defense that you have to kind of fear right now, because it's legitimately strong. Raiders 37, Broncos 12. The real thing here is Josh Jacobs, who leads the way with 21 carries, 112 yards, and 2 touchdowns, plus 4 catches for 24 yards. In garbage time, Devontae Booker rushes for 81 yards, also finds the end zone twice, but the game was well in hand at that point. Derek Carr just doesn't really have to do much. Just 154 yards receiving. Darren Waller is your leading receiver, but just 37 yards. So I don't know, tags, anything that you can take away from this game for the Raiders?
No, you were never going to be able to trust any of their pass catchers outside of Darren Waller.
Right.
Josh Jacobs had a better game than I thought he was going to be honest.
He looked good. I've been kind of the down guy a little bit on Jacobs. I listed him as a sell high in our show, and that was very clear to say. I still ranked him as basically my RB12 going forward, but I was a little worried about his knee. I was a little worried that Devontae Booker kept factoring in. He'd always looked like he was on the verge of leaving the game with getting injured, but he ran really, really well in this game. I watched his game pretty closely.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing is, I've always said Josh Jacobs is a good running back. I just don't have any faith in the coaching staff in terms of what they're doing, the play calling, not involving him in the passing game. He does see 4 targets in this game, which is somewhat encouraging, especially knowing that they only threw the ball 25 times. So.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I had him ranked as the RB10 this week, which I know it doesn't sound bad, but I didn't expect this performance out of him. So it was a nice surprise.
Yeah, no, he was good. It's encouraging for him. But again, I think I was probably lower than the industry on him, just not this week necessarily, but for the rest of season outlook. So I'm just kind of catching up here. For the Broncos, just ugly. Drew Locke was clearly banged up in this game, whether it was his shoulder or something, he played through it. But 218 yards, 1 touchdown, 3 picks in this game. Let's talk the running game, though, very quickly. Philip Lindsay, not involved at all. By the way, I'm sorry, those stats were not correct. He added some at the end, 257 yards and 4 interceptions. My bad on that one. Look, the running game, though, tags, just not involved. I mean, Melvin Gordon, 11 for 46 on the ground. Phillip Lindsay, 4 carries for 2 yards. I didn't miss him getting hurt, did I? Did they just completely move away from him or what?
I did not see much of that game. I'll be completely honest about it. There were a lot of afternoon games where this was just not one there that was high on my radar.
Yeah.
Where, no, I don't remember seeing Phillip Lindsay much of all that I watched, but Melvin Gordon's not a timeshare running back, and I don't know. I mean, it's he's
Can you trust any running back? Let's assume he didn't get hurt, because I did not. I mean, I was watching it. I saw him in, I saw him out, so I don't think he got hurt. Mm-hmm. Can you trust either, I mean, Melvin Gordon going forward?
This was a good matchup against the Raiders. They've been pretty bad against the run this year, so I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, that's a relative term, though. I mean, when you think about it, and the running backs that we're putting around that RB 25 to like 30 range, they're guys like Jamal Williams that are getting like, you know, 10 to 12 touches. So I guess Gordon's going to be like an RB3 flex start. He's not a guy that you must start every week, though.
Yeah. For the passing game, again, as I mentioned, Locke's numbers weren't pretty. It wasn't really pretty for any of the pass catchers. You know, Tim Patrick has 4 catches on 6 targets for 61 yards and gets ejected for fighting Noah Fant, who I liked in this game, coming into this game for sure. 7 targets, just 3 catches for 18 yards. And Jerry Jeudy adds on a couple in garbage time, but it really wasn't much. 8 targets, 4 catches, 68 yards. Tags, talk about Jeudy for a second. I mean, because this was a game they were behind. It wasn't a difficult matchup. He added on at the very end a few catches. But realistically, not a great game for him. Is he somebody who you think fantasy managers can just start going forward? Or do we need to think about more about his situation in the matchup?
No, yeah, you know that I'm a big Jerry Jeudy fan. Like, he was my number one wide receiver in this draft class. I love him going, like, I love his future, but I don't think that he's, like, a must play every single week. You know, going back to last week, it was a matchup against Atlanta. Atlanta's just, they're whatever. The Raiders, it was a good matchup, but he also missed some practice time this week with a shoulder injury, so I don't know how much that's affecting him. He still saw 8 targets, so knowing the targets he's seeing, because I think he has 30 targets over the last, maybe even 32 targets over the last 3 games.
So, I think that's right.
So I have him right now. I'm looking at my rest season rankings. I have him at wide receiver 38. This game with another 8 target game with him playing the perimeter, I might actually move him up a little bit more. So like maybe around wide receiver 35, because those targets combined with that big one play ability, I kind of like him. But again, the reason that what keeps me in check on Jerry Jeudy, what keeps me in check on Tim Patrick, the reason we've had these arguments before about Tim Patrick is the fact that Drew Lock is not a consistent quarterback. He doesn't consistently throw for 275 plus yards. In fact, he almost regularly throws for 250 yards or less. So I just don't think it's an offense that you need to be attached to. And there's going to be some maddening consistency, and the ceiling that you get is probably just not worth it.
Cardinals 32. Bills 30. This ended right as we were recording here. Let's start with the running game here. Kenyon Drake was iffy, you know, trending up, then optimistic that he would play. He winds up rushing for 100 yards here on 16 carries. He does lose a fumble, but Chase Edmonds still factors in, 8 for 56 on the ground. Then he gets his passing work, catches all 3 of his targets for 21 yards. Are you good to go with Drake going forward? And do you think Edmonds, even with Drake active, is somebody who fantasy managers can start in half or full PPR leagues?
I thought Chase Edmonds was going to be a better play this week.
So did I.
That did not work out. Kenyon Drake looked pretty good running the ball. He has actually, even before he got hurt, he started looking better. It was almost like was it his mom or his grandma that told him, like, what are you doing? Start running hard. And he started running hard, and that's what happened. So Kenyon Drake is going to flip-flop, because I did have Chase Edmonds higher in my rest of season rankings, because I felt like, all right, I don't even know when Kenyon Drake's going to come back. I'll ride Edmonds because he's been playing well. But even when he got the opportunity, he didn't run with it. So it was relatively easy for them to go back to Drake. But can we talk about what you and I discussed before we started the stream?
Sure. What was it?
I told you, I said the Bills, when they scored that touchdown, I was like, sweet, I had the Bills against the money line.
Yes, you did.
And then you're like, I thought the Cardinals were going to win that game. I was like, whew, felt good to get the Bills win. And then like legitimately, I see DeAndre Hopkins. Did you see it?
Yes, I saw it, of course.
I wanted to cut you off when I saw it happening, but I was just like, you got to be kidding me. It was kind of ridiculous, because before that catch, DeAndre Hopkins was held in check for most of the game.
He was. Yeah, he was, which is a little worrisome considering, I mean, I know there were all the pass interference last week, but he was held in check kind of last week too. So, I mean, he does end up, of course, Kyler Murray rushes for 2 touchdowns, then throws that other one. But how do you feel about the fact that, you know, in the end, Hopkins saw 12 targets, caught 7 of them, and winds up with 127 yards, and he scores the touchdowns. But it's obviously a little misleading because you have kind of the Hail Mary. Meanwhile, by the way, Christian Kirk, 6 targets, good, 4 catches, whatever, but only 27 yards. So I guess talk about the pass catchers for Arizona here.
I mean, Christian Kirk, a little disappointing because you had Tre'Davious White covering DeAndre Hopkins. So Kirk walking away with 4 catches for 27 yards. This was what we were always worried about, right? Because we went back through Kirk's schedule and we looked at it and we said the matchups that he had were fantastic. But the coming out party was against Miami because it was just like, all right, you know, Xavien Howard was shadowing DeAndre Hopkins, but Byron Jones is no joke on the other side. So it was like, Christian Kirk got it done. I guess we have to trust him. So for him to walk away in this game with 4 catches for 27 yards, it definitely brings us back to earth a little bit with him. Because Kyler Murray was kind of, he was like on this streak of passing where it was just like all of a sudden he went from a guy that was like, you know, high 6, low 7 yards per attempt. And then it's like all of a sudden he's got games with 9 and 10 yards per attempt. And you're like, is Kyler Murray like legit becoming that guy, the guy that you cannot stop right now? And then this game, he comes back down to earth. It would have been like a low 7 had he not completed that Hail Mary pass with no touchdowns. So it's just understanding some volatility. And, you know, he belongs right there. That low end wide receiver 3 conversation is a guy that comes with some volatility. But overall, he has played better. His target floor seems like it's right around that 5 or 6 range. So when Kyler Murray is playing well, buying time, Christian Kirk is, he's in that range. I think him and Jerry Jeudy belong in similar territory.
Okay, I'll buy that then. Yeah, and I agree, because that for me is borderline wide receiver 3 territory, which again, once you get, you and I do this every year, Tex. We've been doing this Sunday Night Recap for 3 seasons, I think, and every year we say the same thing and be like, when you're in that wide receiver 3, borderline wide receiver 3 territory, then it's like, whatever, who knows? We don't know. Do whatever you want. Okay, so let's get to the Bills then. Josh Allen, weird game, 284 yards passing. 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. He rushes for 38 yards. He does not rush for a touchdown, but he catches a touchdown on that great play and a good catch and a good run by him. He has that. Meanwhile, Cole Beasley is your leading receiver. 13 targets, 11 catches, 109 yards, and the score. Stephon Diggs, 10 catches, 93 yards, and he catches that very late score that looked like it sealed the game. John Brown, another very solid effort here. 8 targets, 6 catches, 72 yards. Anything really to say on the passing game, Tex? We'll get to the running game in a second, but anything to say on the passing game here for the Bills?
Yeah, I don't know. It was pretty funny. My brother messaged me this morning. He's like, hey, John Brown DFS, what do you think? I was like, it could just as easily be a Cole Beasley game. I just don't know how to feel about this pass-catching trio, because I felt like Cole Beasley wasn't someone that would just go away. And then, of course, you see him with 11 catches, 109 yards, and a touchdown. I mean, Stephon Diggs, the guy is a superstar. We always knew he was. We always just wanted the targets. Minnesota never gave him. And I think that Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson are still dealing with that now, where, you know, they wish they had the targets that Diggs is getting in Buffalo. So it's good to see him succeeding there with those targets. John Brown, clearly healthy, 8 targets. He does work with them. And then Cole Beasley, after 2 down weeks where I was like, okay, are we getting to the point where we can no longer trust Beasley as a high floor option? Because it seemed like they started to involve other guys like Isaiah McKenzie a little bit, and Gabriel Davis was getting involved. And it was like, are they phasing out Cole Beasley? That kind of safety valve for Josh Allen over the middle of the field. And then a game like this happens and restores our faith. So I don't know if too much changes. John Brown might move up a little bit just because we're seeing him more healthy.
That's it for me. I feel like I wanted to start John Brown in a league this week. It was really him or Jerry Jeudy, for example. And when I was looking at my rankings, they were right there. And I said, I wound up with Jeudy and I ranked Jeudy higher, but I felt safer a little bit with Brown because Brown now strikes me as pretty safe, unless it's a terrible matchup. I think as long as he's healthy, I think he's a guy who you can roll out there as basically a wide receiver 3 with a fairly high floor. Like I feel good with also a high ceiling, because I think with the passing volume, depending on what happens in that game, he can have one of these boom games for sure. And if you're looking at, you know, 6 for 72 as your basic kind of floor at this point, is the way I view him. He's a guy who I want to start most weeks. I do not want to start either running back though, Tags. And error on me. I mean, I kind of thought that Zach Moss was going to have a decent game in this one, not Singletary, of course, but 7 for 20 on the ground for Moss. He has 1 catch for -3 yards. Devin Singletary, just 4 carries for 15 yards. I mean, should, I mean, can we ever start a Buffalo running back or just forget it rest of season?
I mean, I've talked about this in the primer quite a bit in saying that the reason that I don't like them and the reason I was saying to trade away Zach Moss is because this backfield has averaged 21 running back touches per game. I don't really even care if it's a 70-30 split. That's not enough touches for to guarantee production for these guys, especially Moss, who's not really used heavily in the passing game. So it's either touchdown or bust. You know that you have Josh Allen stealing some goal line touches. And then you go over to Singletary. It's like, okay, he's getting some use in the passing game, but he doesn't get any goal line carries. So I just hate this backfield. And I would rather not be attached to them at all.
Yes. That is
the correct answer.
Rams 23, Seahawks 16. Let us start with this running back situation. Look, Daryl Henderson finds the end zone, 7 for 28. Malcolm Brown finds the end zone twice, 6 for 33. Neither one of these guys was your leading rusher. Neither one of these guys got the most carries. Instead, that's Cam Akers, 10 for 38. Not all that impressive. Tags. What do you do with this situation? Who's your favorite out of this? And can you start any one of these guys next week?
Blah, blah. That's me throwing up all over my keyboard. That's another one where I've been putting him in the sell column. I said, Daryl Henderson, sell him, because you remember how Ronald Jones lost value overnight? Because that's just how this works. That can happen to Daryl Henderson. Get rid of him while his value is high. The matchup was terrible against Seattle. I am actually shocked that they came away with as many rushing yards and touchdowns as they did in this game. Goff threw for 302 yards, but he didn't throw a single touchdown because these guys just kept stealing them. And it was making me mad because, again, it was just a bad DFS day for me with Jared Goff. But overall, I mean, I don't even know where to begin. Daryl Henderson, I think Daryl Henderson is the best running back in this backfield, but I can't say that I can trust him coming off a game where he trailed Cam Akers, a guy that's fresh, a guy that's a rookie, a guy that they drafted in the second round that they want to succeed.
Yeah,
it's gross.
Well, at least the good news for you is that they play the Bucs next week. So you can just basically have an excuse to say, I'll bench all your Rams running backs and not look like an idiot if we guess on the wrong one. But yeah, this was ridiculous and frustrating. And I have absolutely no idea what to make of it. Mm-hmm. So for now, I'm avoiding everybody in that backfield. It's a disappointing day for the pass catchers. Like you said, Goff does throw for 302 yards. They moved the ball. They won the game. Hard to be too hard on anybody, but Kupp just 5 for 50. Woods 5 for 33. Your leading receiver, as a lot of people were throwing out there as a sleeper, 10 targets, 8 catches, 94 yards, is Josh Reynolds. Any interest in him going forward?
No, I liked him in this game. It's the same reason I like Kendrick Bourne the other week. And you just attack Seattle's secondary. You keep doing that, like, over and over. It's the gift that keeps on giving, and no one wants to pay attention for whatever reason when it comes to even wide receiver threes. As long as you're getting out there getting targets, and Josh Reynolds came into this game with 22 targets in his last three games. So to see him produce, I didn't think that he was going to get to lead the team with 10 targets. I thought that was going to be Robert Woods, but yeah, I do not take this as much going forward because he's still Josh Reynolds.
Meanwhile, it is time to halt the MVP talk on Russell Wilson. 248 yards, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions. He also loses a fumble. I mean, he rushes for 60 yards. Fine. Your only really person that you could start here and feel kind of good about is Alex Collins, who nobody started. 11 for 43 with the touchdown. Tyler Lockett's your leading receiver. 5 catches for 66 yards, and DK Metcalf pretty much shut down by Jalen Ramsey. 4 targets, 2 catches, 28 yards. I don't know, Tags. What's the takeaway here for Seattle?
It was a bad week for sure. But I think they need Chris Carson back. That's number one. And number two, the Rams were coming off a bye. This is a divisional game. They know the team extremely well. DK Metcalf had a pass go off his fingertips. But if there's one thing to take away, it's that the Rams are a dominant defense. It's plain and simple. Like, you do not attack this defense with wide receivers. You don't attack it with running backs. It's a better matchup, but I just don't think you have to attack the matchup. Treat the Rams like you do the Bears. That's basically my advice.
Okay. I love it. Good enough for me. Saints 27, 49ers 13. The big news here is Drew Brees, who injures his ribs, and he is getting an MRI. Jameis Winston doesn't play particularly well in his stead. 6 of 10 for 63 yards, but Alvin Kamara just continues to go nuts. If the yardage isn't there, the touchdowns are. Only 8 for 15 on the ground, but he does score twice on the ground, plus 8 targets, 7 catches, 83 yards, and a touchdown. Meanwhile, your leading receiver is Michael Thomas, who catches 2 passes for 27 yards. It's just ugly, you know, with Jameis Winston in there at the very least. So, Tags, I mean, I guess you can answer this either way you want to answer it. But how do you view Michael Thomas here coming off a disappointing game? And you can say how much it changes whether or not Drew Brees is able to play next week. And by the way, they have Atlanta next week.
Yeah.
Just to tee it up.
Yeah, Michael Thomas is a guy that I would, if your trade deadline's still open, I'm going to buy Michael Thomas. He's still, you know, one of the most talented wide receivers in the NFL. Once Jameis Winston came into the game, he actually did target Michael Thomas a couple times, like right inside the 5-yard line, just overthrew him multiple times. So it wasn't the game that we had hoped, the game that I thought. Again, this is just another bad one for me. But Michael Thomas, I just can't overreact. He's a guy that we were drafting in the first round, a guy that broke records last year. I can't move him outside of my top 7 wide receivers in the remainder of the season. But I'm lowering expectations little by little because Drew Brees has clearly not been the same quarterback. And there are more pass-catching options in this offense with Emmanuel Sanders. Alvin Kamara is obviously heavily involved. And you just don't want to take away targets from Alvin Kamara right now. It's almost like last year when it's like, why would we take away targets from Michael Thomas to give them to somebody else? Because he was doing so well with those targets. But is Jameis Winston I think he would be a downgrade for Michael Thomas just because Jameis is the type of guy that he would stretch the field, I think, a little bit more than Drew Brees does. But I don't know. Jameis Winston has supported fantasy wide receivers throughout his career, so I don't know why I would move down Michael Thomas that far.
Yeah, I think he would move down a little bit just because of the connection that Thomas has shown with Brees in his career, and Brees is so incredibly accurate. But yeah, you know, YOLO. It's Jameis Winston. He's going to be out there. He's going to be peppering everybody with targets. So I wouldn't move Thomas down too much. And I agree with you. I would buy low on Thomas if I could right now. And you probably can, because if you are rostering Michael Thomas, you have gotten nothing. Nothing. We are in week 10. Whoever is rostering him must be incredibly frustrated at this point. So I would go out and try to buy low if I could. For the Niners, it's just, we talked about Brandon Ayuk. Nick Mullins, you know, not nearly as bad as he looked against Green Bay. Still only 247 yards, 1 touchdown. He does throw 2 picks. Look, I don't really think, Tags, that there is much to take away from this game right now because of the fact that they're on a bye next week. There was no Deebo Samuel. He'll be back. There was no Raheem Mostert. He'll be back. Jerick McKinnon just 18 for 33, as you had mentioned earlier. Jamichael Hasty completely uninvolved. And, you know, a tough matchup. And again, you assume Mostert's going to be back. So realistically, we've talked about Ayuk anymore. Is there anything else that you want to take away from this game, given their situation?
I don't think so.
I love it. Let's move on to our final game. The Steelers 36, the Bengals 10. Let's talk about the running game here, Tags. James Conner, 13 for 36. And I feel like every time I look up, James Conner goes 20 minutes without getting a touch and then has a run for -5 yards and then doesn't see the ball again for 10 minutes and then has a run for -5 yards. And they throw near the goal line. Now he has 2 catches for 12 yards, but just a bad game for Conner. And it's not the first one. Again, another game recently. So how do you view Conner going forward?
Oh, I mean, after matchups with the Cowboys and the Bengals and doing nothing, I mean, how do we feel great about him? But again,
and he's got the Jaguars next, right? I mean, you're like, come on, this is going to be great. But I mean, and they get near the goal line, Tags. They just throw.
Why not?
Or they run a sweep to Claypool. Like they have no interest in really, and their offense, I can't even criticize it, Tags. Right. You can't criticize it because the fact that they're just like, hi, we are throwing the ball and you know, we're throwing the ball and you can't stop us from throwing the ball mm-hmm. is something that as people who like good coaching, we should be like, all right, kudos to you for doing what works. But I mean, I've like you have had Conner high as a strong kind of mid-range RB1. Yep. And I don't really think that I can keep him there anymore rest of season.
I'm with you. I'm going to move him down. You know, after seeing the final finishing line here, it's like in 2 matchups like that. I mean, granted, there might be some RB1 performances mixed in, but I don't think you can expect it every single week. So moving him down, because like think about it. We got James Robinson, a guy that's getting, you know, 20 touches every single week. Chris Carson should be coming back from injury. Josh Jacobs did really well in a tough matchup against the Broncos. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, James Conner might be moving down into that, like, even borderline RB1 territory rather than a solid one.
Yeah, I mean, I had him 9. I think he's going to be outside when all is said and done. I mean, Miles Sanders is back. When all is said and done, I don't know, man. I think he's falling outside of RB1 territory. It's really frustrating. And then he'll score 8 touchdowns next week against Jacksonville. But whatever. For the pass catchers, I mean, look, 333 yards and 4 touchdowns for Ben. All 4 of them go to the wide receivers. Deontay Johnson, 11 targets, 6 catches, 116 yards, and 1 touchdown. Juju, 13 targets, 9 catches, 77 yards, and a touchdown. Chase Claypool, 10 targets, 4 catches, 56 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So, I mean, this is just basically, are they all wide receiver twos going forward, Tags?
I'm going to go ahead and say yes. I don't even again, it goes back to the whole Bucks conversation where I would actually rather have this trio than the Bucks trio. But if Roethlisberger's not throwing for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, it's the same exact conversation where someone's going to disappoint. But more often than not, he's probably going to hit that number, knowing that he keeps developing chemistry with these receivers. Chase Claypool is coming into his own. The guy's just been a monster. Deontay Johnson, one of the best, honestly, one of the best route runners in the league. He's undervalued. And Juju Smith-Schuster is now reaping the benefits of the fact that those two are really damn good. And so he's not the focal point of the defense anymore. It's not like, oh, Juju Smith-Schuster, got to slow that guy down. He's kind of an afterthought.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yep. This is great. I mean, you know, if you roster any of these pass catchers, enjoy it. Stop worrying about which one to start. Just start them all. I mean, I get that question so often. I'm like, which one? I'm like, legitimately, I'm basically projecting them for the same amount of fantasy points. Start them all. Stop asking me that question. Okay. For Joe Burrow, you didn't think it was going to be great. It wasn't. 213 yards, 1 touchdown. That touchdown, though, goes to T. Higgins. Pretty impressive game for him. 9 targets, 7 catches, 115 yards. And the score, Tyler Boyd, 8 targets, 6 catches for 41 yards. Anything change here for you on how you value either of these Bengals wide receivers?
No, not at all. If anything, AJ Green is just going to, you know, fall off the face of the earth. I do this article every offseason. It's called 175 Interesting Facts. And I can't wait to see just how inefficient AJ Green was this year, because it's brutal. Like, it's starting to borderline on Curtis Samuel 2019 territory, where he was like the most inefficient wide receiver that I've tracked in quite a while. Whereas T. Higgins, ever since he became a starter in this offense, he was like, I was looking at that. He was the number 9 wide receiver in football. That's over a big stretch, because it's from week 3 up till his bye week. So week 3 through week 8. So you had a 6-game sample size where he was the number 9 fantasy wide receiver. Now, the matchup against Pittsburgh was not nearly as bad as people made it out to be. They were allowing, I think it was the 12th most fantasy points coming into this game to wide receivers. So I knew there was going to be some production. I felt like Tyler Boyd would probably be the best bet. But T. Higgins, I mean, I talked to you about that in the chat this morning. We were talking about Justin Jefferson, and I said, I'd play T. Higgins over Justin Jefferson. I don't get it. Yep. So it's good to see Higgins have a big, I didn't think it was going to be this big. Yeah. But yeah, he's a must start every week.
Yeah. And look, we're assuming, as we have probably been assuming for, you know, certainly this week, the week before the bye, that Joe Mixon's going to be back next week. But if he's not, I mean, you know, a disappointing game from Gio Bernard. Their offensive line is beat up. They were behind the whole game, just 47 total yards. But against Washington next week, just assume that Joe Mixon is out. You're still going to roll out Gio Bernard as essentially an RB2 and a half PPR.
Yeah, league. For sure. This is a brutal matchup against Pittsburgh.
This was rough. All right. That is going to do it for the Sunday night recap for week 10 of the NFL season. That is crazy. We are going. Again, you know, thanks everybody for tuning in. You can watch this on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros. Go ahead and subscribe. Don't forget to enter our contest. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram, or subscribe, and then go to fantasypros.com/contest. We will be back tomorrow talking about our waiver wires. I will talk to you then. Bye.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full grate sear zone so you can put more food on the flame. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.